You got to eat healthy and live healthy to be healthy and look healthy. End of story. Morgan Spurlock.
Empowerment in education. Two powerful elements that will help you break free of convention and transform your passion for wellness to a level beyond the status quo. The Essential Oil Revolution, where you're given the tools to supersede an ordinary everyday lifestyle. Inspiring speakers, DIY recipes, healthy living tips, and more. You'll discover it all here. So tune in and get ready for a wellness revolution.
Hey, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Samantha Lee Wright. Today, we have a slightly different kind of episode coming your way. In light of all of the things happening with COVID-19, I wanted to do a special episode highlighting the foundations of health for you all focused around the coronavirus. I really wanted to cover the topic of masks specifically because there's so many questions that people have centered around masks right now. And I know that I personally have been wanting some clarity around how masks are effective. Why are people saying sometimes they're not? And what the debate is on both sides. And then also specifically, what else can we be doing in our lives to boost our immune systems, protect ourselves from the scary C word that's going around right now? So today's episode, unlike most of our shows, don't focus a lot around the topic of essential oils, but I really wanted the opportunity to talk to Dr. Furman, whose work I really admire. If you're not familiar with his work already, I think you're really going to like what he has to say. So we'll get to that interview soon, but first let's talk about essential oils for a little while. I wanted to share my favorite oils from this past week, and that has been the Thieves Chest Rub. That is a fairly new product coming from Young Living right now. If you haven't experienced it yet, it is a chest rub formula that comes in this great little squeeze bottle where you don't have to get your hands all greasy to apply it, which is one of my favorite things about it. So if you want to check it out, or if you want to try to make your own version of it, you could buy one of those empty kind of squirt bottles from Amazon or wherever, or just use like an old squirt bottle you've got lying around. Anything that will allow you to fill your own formula of stuff and then squeeze a little bit out of the top will do. And it is a combination of eucalyptus essential oil, menthol, and camphor. As you might be able to hear, I've got a little bit of phlegm stuck down in my chest, and I've been putting the Thieves Chest Rub on at night, especially at night when you lay down, you've got that extra kind of weight of gravity, and that's when the cough likes to come out. So putting that chest rub on is so soothing. It smells so good. Now, if you want to make your own kind of chest rub concoction, then I would use a base of coconut oil and maybe even some cacao butter or beeswax shaven down, because what you want is a real thick carrier oil base for this, because you don't want the oil to soak into your chest and your skin too quickly. You want it to act as sort of an ongoing vapor that's going to be releasing from that chest rub. So you want a thick carrier oil base. Again, beeswax is great for that. If you have some of that, you can shave it down and melt it a bit. And then from there, do a real strong concoction. You know, if you're making a small batch, maybe 20 to 30 drops of an essential oil, nice and strong, of mainly eucalyptus. That's the go-to for all things respiratory. So whatever eucalyptus oils you have around or blends of are great. If you want to add some other things in there to support your immune system, I would throw in some peppermint to open up those nasal passageways, maybe a nice herby oil like rosemary or thyme or oregano. Tea tree is great. Frankincense is great. Also, any of those oils you have, throw them into that nice thick carrier oil. Use it as a chest rub as needed, or check out the Thieves Chest Rub that is super easy to apply. Real strong, real potent, and I give it 5 stars. And now I'm super excited to share this week's DIY dugout recipe. It comes from Deborah Shannon in Atkins, Arkansas, and it is a recipe for a citrus fizz. This sounds so delicious. In a glass, combine the following ingredients and mix thoroughly. Half a can to one can of sparkling water, one packet of stevia, 2 drops grapefruit essential oil, and then optional, if you have any Ningxia Red around, add 1 to 2 ounces of Ningxia Red. If you don't have Ningxia Red, which is a great wolfberry puree juice that Young Living makes, you can add in maybe another dark red kind of juice like cherry juice or pomegranate or something. And then ice. So just combine all that and you've got yourself a citrus fizz. Thank you again, Deborah, for your recipe. Sounds delicious. We love hearing your DIY recipes. Send those in to us at DIY@revolutionoilspodcast.com. If you want to check out our archives of all of our DIY recipes, check out our website, revolutionoilspodcast.com.
Hello, dear friends. In today's world, it's hard to maintain balance in any area of life. This includes in regard to our hormones. Let's face it, stress impacts everyone, and this affects our hormones. Compound stress on top of an already fluctuating cycle, and not so happy symptoms can result. Thankfully, we have essential oils to tame our mind and body, but a lot of times, many women need something more to keep their hormones at a healthy level. And that something more is where Happy Mammoth comes in. And right now, they are generously offering you 15% off your first order when you visit happymammoth.com and use promo code REVOLUTION. Happy Mammoth is a forward-thinking, all-natural wellness brand. They are obsessed with empowering people with quality natural health solutions aimed at promoting total body health and vitality. I love their comprehensive formula, Hormone Harmony, which contains herbal extracts that help to support hormonal levels, stress, mood, resiliency, and blood sugar. In fact, it contains adaptogenic herbs that help the body adapt to any kind of stressors. This can help to keep hormones in much better balance. Due to its synergy, Hormone Harmony formulation can be used for women in perimenopause, menopause, and any female with symptoms of hormone imbalances. What I love as a naturopathic and functional medicine doctor is that their products are third-party tested for quality and purity, free of heavy metals, and free from artificial fillers. For all these reasons, I am confident recommending Happy Mammoth to my clients and grateful to be supplied with my own bottle for a happier mood and less bloated belly during that time of the month. I am so pleased to have a company that stands behind women's health and optimizing wellness through science and education. So please support Happy Mammoth and the show. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with promo code REVOLUTION at checkout. That's Happy MAMMOTH.com and use promo code REVOLUTION for 15% off your first order.
Hello, dear friends. As an essential oil user, I know that you have probably come to not only appreciate, but to actually expect the powerful shift in emotions that you can get instantaneously when smelling your essential oils. When someone's dealing with the complex emotion of grief, life can get pretty heavy. Although emotions and essential oils can both be good allies, sometimes more is needed. I want to introduce you to a new podcast called A Place of Yes that is now available wherever you listen to podcasts. The host of the show is Heather Strother. Heather actually had a severe loss when she lost her 4-year-old son, Jack, suddenly to medical complications. 13 years later, now Heather is sharing the only way that she could move forward from the loss. This was by channeling her grief for the good and finding a place of yes. Now, her and her husband have created a nonprofit organization called Jack's Help from Heaven. Since then, they've helped hundreds of families with medically fragile children raise more than $1 million to help them to purchase with items that are not just medically necessary, but also convenient. Their goal is to improve the quality of life, and it offers you an opportunity to learn strategies to cope with grief and how to truly be there for someone that you love that is grieving. Now, sometimes the guests aren't just talking about the loss of a child, but the loss of a life they thought that they were going to live. And I know that we can all relate to that. Please listen to A Place of Yes now wherever you listen to podcasts. And also visit our sponsor at jackshelpfromheaven.org/news www.heatherandbrian.org/podcast and learn about Heather and Brian's incredible nonprofit organization.
Well, I'm here with Dr. Joel Furman, who is a board-certified family physician, seven-time New York Times bestselling author, and internationally recognized expert on nutrition and natural healing. In addition to his medical practice in New Jersey, Dr. Furman operates the Eat to Live Retreat in San Diego. He's the president of the Nutritional Research Foundation and is on the faculty of Northern Arizona University Health Sciences Division. Dr. Furman's five PBS specials have raised more than $50 million for public broadcasting, which is probably the coolest thing I've ever heard. Dr. Furman, welcome to the show. We're so glad you're here.
Oh, thank you. Glad to be here today.
Well, I understand that you've done a lot of research into how people can protect themselves from the coronavirus. Can you tell us a little bit more about the work you've done in that area?
Yes. You know, I've been a physician specializing in nutrition for more than 30 years. And I even wrote a book called Super Immunity about 5 or 6 years ago, even discussing the probability of this happening in the near future, because the American populace is so ubiquitously immunosuppressed from the diet they eat, which creates an epidemic of obesity, high blood pressure, diabetes, autoimmune conditions. And the consequence of being so sick and having such a sickly population is that they're exposed to now novel viruses, which can now spread like wildflower, like wildfire, through a community that's so nutritionally immunosuppressed. We know even the white blood cell count of all Americans is artificially elevated because of so much inflammation. And fat cells there's no such thing as a healthy overweight person, because fat cells spew out cytokines, lipokines, reactive oxygen species that actually activate create chronic inflammation, which keep your white blood cells in a constant state of vigilance or excitation. So when you need them to work, they're not going to work well, like with against COVID. So what I'm saying right now is that if you haven't heard it before, that you don't have to have diabetes, it's a nutritional related condition, it's reversible. If you haven't heard it before, that you should be lowering your blood pressure with diet, not drugs, because drugs cause cancer. And if you haven't heard it before, that you don't have to have a heart attack or a stroke. Those are totally nutritionally and dietarily result of nutritional ignorance. And with my work and my books and myself, plus you could say thousands of other physicians, doing similar work, we're trying to scream from the rooftops that we can resolve this healthcare crisis. But now the crisis has come to a head, because these people that are vulnerable from having a later life cancer or a premature heart attack or stroke are now very vulnerable to being killed by COVID, which creates a lot of deaths in a shorter period of time. If that wasn't enough to scare people against cancer, breast cancer wasn't enough reason to eat healthy, and heart attacks and strokes and dementia weren't enough, now we got something that is at least thrust into people's face in an urgent manner. And maybe it'll wake people up to finally recognizing that that the dietary portfolio Americans eat is a deadly dietary portfolio. And if you can have a new dietary model that will really give you the protection people are looking for, and you don't have to be hurt, damaged, or even injured by COVID, let alone killed by it, a healthy immune system would slough off that COVID, that coronavirus, like nothing, which is what we're seeing happening, because we're only seeing, obviously, the sickest part of the population has really been the most vulnerable part.
Right. It's interesting you're saying all of this. And to me, it's like, well, yeah, no big news flash there. But I feel like the language that's used around it in our culture, it's so ingrained in our population that I don't think people are making that connection between their diet, their lifestyle, and these sort of risk factors, especially with COVID, because the language we use is very much this foreign invader, this foreign enemy that's completely separate from us. And if you get it, then that's bad luck, pretty much, and it's part of our culture. Like you said, I'm curious, in your research that you've done, you talked about how the coronavirus is spreading so rapidly in America because Americans are so unhealthy overall. What does this virus look like in other populations that don't have those same cultural bad habits ingrained in our food and our lifestyles?
That's true, that there are various populations around the world where it's much more difficult for COVID to spread, and for lots of reasons, but nutrition plays a major role. But, historically, You know, we talk about blue zones where people live the longest and have the lowest rates of heart attacks and cancer. But even blue zones that live maybe 10 years longer than most Americans live is not pushing the envelope of human longevity. Blue zones each do some things that are right, but it's not a scientifically designed portfolio of food. They just happen to eat what they're growing in their area and what they've eaten there culturally for generations. We now have, you know, done more studies to actually ascertain what are the most immune-supporting, cancer-protective foods that people can eat. And the blue zones do eat some of those foods, but the more variety of them you eat, the more protection you get. What I'm saying right now is that this opportunity to use modern nutritional science enables us to actually live longer and healthier and not get even better than the blue zones. So we push the envelope of lifespan to close to 100 years old, around to have the bell-shaped curve shape narrowly around 100 years old and not be shaped around 80 years old. But of course, we're talking about extending healthy life expectancy and not being sickly in the 15 years or so before you die. So what makes the American diet even worse is not only people are dying in their late 70s, but they're also pretty sickly in the 10 years and the decade prior to their death. So that gives them a very poor quality and very minimal healthy life expectancy. So there are areas of the world doing better than us that eat better, but we can eat better than there's very few areas of the world that eat as ideally as the science allows us to do today. And we know, for example, that the six foods with the most powerful and scientifically documented effects to prevent cancer, including breast, prostate, and colon cancer, the three most common cancers, are people can remember by the acronym GBOMBS, G-B-O-M-B-S, which stands for greens, beans, onions, mushrooms, berries, and seeds. And it's actually those four foods, the two raw foods and the two cooked foods, that have the best protective effects against COVID and thickening the microbiome and preventing the end of the two cooked or raw foods, of course, are raw green vegetables like salad with arugula and, you know, lettuces and kale and bok choy and of course, raw onion or scallion. So eating a salad every day with a healthy dressing is something that's very foreign to Americans. But if they really want to be protected, they're going to have to start eating some raw greens and raw onion. Mm-hmm. It's so powerful for the human immune system. And then, of course, we recommend a healthy nut or seed-based dressing as opposed to putting oil and salt and grease and sugar on it. We actually, you know, some people put a high, you know, calorie dressing on 50 calories of vegetables. So we make the dressings like a low-sodium tomato sauce with sun-dried tomatoes and roasted garlic and, you know, almonds or sesame seeds or balsamic vinegar or black fig vinegar. We make delicious, healthy dressings or like navel orange blended with sesame seeds and cashew nuts with squeeze of lemon and blood orange vinegar. So, in other words, we're making the dressings super healthy too. And the mantra is to eat a large salad as a main dish once a day. And then, of course, the cooked foods we want people to eat on a regular basis include some beans of different colors, but also of mushrooms. Mushrooms so critical, and you have different types of mushrooms as well on your diet. So eating mushrooms regularly, so it's part of the GBOMBS, greens, beans, onions, mushrooms, berries, and seeds. And we could throw a dart at any of those foods and discuss all the science and all the scientific studies that document their efficacy. But the human body is dependent on these phytonutrients and antioxidants for normal immune function and protection against both bacteria and viruses. And with a novel virus like COVID, that doesn't have to spread through our system and replicate and evade capture and cause such a degree of inflammation. The cytokine storm and the increased inflammation come from this virus is just a combination of the fact that we haven't seen it before. It's a little different in its structure and shape. And of course, also that we're chronically inflamed all the time. And then we overreact with inflammation when there's so many overweight people around.
Mm-hmm. I love your passion, like especially when you talk about food. I can tell how much you love food and love teaching other people how to love the healthy foods that are so good for your body. I imagine that's a big part of the work that you do. You have a lot of books and I imagine there's lots of recipes in them, but that's kind of the difference between a book with recipes and a recipe book is your books really help people change their mindset around food and really fall in love with this new lifestyle and this new way of eating to heal their bodies. So I love that.
Thank you.
Yes, I want to change gears for a minute because I want to get some time in here to focus on the mask issue. I was looking for someone that could come on to sort of just give us an overview of what is happening with the mask debate. Why has it become such a sort of polarized issue? And what does the science say about mask wearing and how it may or may not protect us from coronavirus or protect others?
A mask is going to reduce the number of virulent particles entering the lung. So it is a combination of your chance of getting infection severely does have to do with the size of the inoculum, the number of virulent particles that enter, as well, of course, as the pathology or pathogenicity of that host, of the how dangerous that particular virus is, and how fast it spreads in the body. And of course, the last and most important thing, the resistance of the host to viral replication, all our immune defenses we have, and the nutritional status of the host. And that's what unfortunately our government and health authorities don't talk about in this country. And we're too much politicalized by the social and economic power of the lobbyists, the food industry, the drug industry, the medical industry, the restaurant industry. It's very hard to get science directly out into people's hands directly. And that's what obviously some of myself and the other physicians in the American College of Lifestyle Medicine are working to do. It's actually a board certification of doctors today who are trying to get people to take life, their health and their diet and their lifestyle seriously for they can use it as a therapeutic modality to not just prevent disease, but to reverse disease. So getting back to the mask question is that the mask has some effect, and some masks don't have that great an effect, but of course some of the C95 or the better masks, which have a tighter seal around your mouth, protect others and protect yourself simultaneously. Some masks still, like the wearing a bandana, is still going to have small virus particles coming from outside and move through the edges of it, so it's not going to offer probably as much protection. The answer to the question is you only get partial protection from using a mask. Probably a mask with a shield over it would give you the most protection if you were traveling on an airplane or doing something in a closed situation. I haven't traveled in a while. I'm here at San Diego at my retreat, and people are coming in here to stay with us in this area, which we keep, obviously, we're out in a rural area of San Diego, and there's not much corona here, but we have open air design and we're keeping people that just arrive socially distanced. But if we were traveling on a plane, we would recommend that people wear both a mask and a face shield so nothing gets too concentrated put in their direction when they're at close quarters with other people. But I don't think there's any role of wearing a mask, of course, when you're outdoors in the fresh air and sunshine, you're playing tennis, you're climbing in the mountains, you're on the, you walk. So in other words, just the mask is for as you get closer to people and more people get in the vicinity and the chance for the virus to be transmitted in the air, then of course, wearing a mask and of course, wearing a shield over the mask can give you the most protection. And that's what doctors do in hospitals so they don't get sick. I mean, certain doctors get sick, but they don't get sick more than the general population do. They actually get sick less than the general population because they're wearing usually double protection. And that means they're wearing gloves, mask, and a face shield over it.
Right. And when you say, I just want to clarify, you get the most protection from, wearing a mask and a face shield, do you mean protection for yourself or for others or for both? Is there a different, I hear the debate a lot of people saying, well, I don't want to wear a mask. I'm not afraid of getting sick. And then the other side goes, well, it's not for you. It's to protect other people in case you have the virus. What are your thoughts there?
That's right. They're saying a certain number of people who catch the virus don't even get symptoms. And of course, the healthier you are, the less chance of getting symptoms. But if you get a mild disease or a symptomless disease, there's still a period where the virus is, if you've been exposed, can be in your vicinity and in your breath that could expose others. That's the concern. Obviously, doctors wear a mask when they wear the C95 mask or a certain type of mask that fits tighter around their faces. And you breathe through the mask, not under it in the sides of it. People are wearing the masks wrong and they're not wearing the mask that's tightly fit around their nose. It's not fit properly around their chin. So they're still spewing out viruses on both sides of it. So it really has to do with the type of mask you're using, how well it's fitting you. And if you really want to protect yourself more, then we're talking about as they do in hospitals. And I would recommend that if you were airplane traveling to protect yourself more. And that's when we put the face shield on top of the mask. The face shield alone is not enough protection because you can still get inhale the virus. But compared to the when you have the mask and the face shield, they do work in a combination to give you a little extra protection.
The last question I want to ask you about the mask wearing is something you briefly mentioned about proper usage of masks. So one thing I picked up on is making sure that if you are wearing a mask, that to not potentially spread your, you know, when you breathe or if you cough, so it doesn't escape around the edges, make sure that it's a tight fitting mask. Are there any other recommendations or tips for proper usage of masks so that they are effective to protect yourself and or other people?
Well, yeah, you know how the masks sometimes have that little metal wire in the nose that has to be shaped to your nose and adhere to your face. Certain masks, I see people, you know, wearing masks improperly, but I think if you're going to wear a mask, then you should have one that fits properly on both the top end and the bottom end. So it's really, so you're breathing, your breath is coming out through the mask and not through the sides of the mask. So it's certainly, you have to bend that metal piece around your nose and the bottom piece has to be fit properly, you know, over your chin. So it makes a seal or it makes a tighter seal. And certainly the masks that work a little better are still not expensive and they're available. So if you're going to take the trouble of wearing a mask, you might as well try to get a good one.
Exactly.
And of course, you know, you don't have to put yourself in a position where you need to wear a mask because you can just stay away from people and stay home and stay and go outdoors and then only put the mask on once in a while when you need to, when you're going into shop or do something where you have to be close to people in a post office or something like that.
Dr. Furman, I want to pick your brain a little bit more about your vast knowledge about foods and other natural substances that can help protect us against things like cancer, reversing diabetes, and protecting ourselves from COVID. Because that's the thing, right? When you eat well, when you eat to live or eat for life, as your book is called, you don't just get benefits in one area. It benefits your whole body, including increased immunity, weight loss, disease reversal, on and on. So share with us just a few of your favorite tips or recipes that are in some of your books.
Well, like we said earlier, I want people to change their lunch as the most important meal of the day. I want their lunch to be a big salad and a bowl of vegetable bean soup and a piece of fruit or some berries for dessert. It's so easy to change your lunch to salad, soup, and dessert. And you put beans in the soup, usually vegetable juices, not just vegetable broth, but some vegetable juices as well. And then you want to blend some cruciferous greens and onion family like leek or scallion into the soup as well, beans, chopped mushrooms. And you can make all pea soups and sweet and sour, lentil and cabbage. And you can put in, you know, a little bit of, you know, a little bit of prune or a little bit of apple cider vinegar. You could change the flavors. You can put in spice. You can blend a little creaminess in with some hemp seeds. We can make these super delicious soups. And so you can keep that soup the whole week or 5 days straight in your refrigerator. And you just make usually a salad dressing on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so you change your dressing a couple. You may use the same dressing usually for a few nights just to stop so much work of cooking in the kitchen. And breakfast doesn't have to be so complicated. No, what I'm saying right now is, I want to be clear here, that if people are overweight, they should be dropping their weight at 2 pounds a week. That's a pound every 3 days or a kilogram a week. Otherwise, they're going to be too high a risk of COVID if they're overweight and still remaining overweight. The minute you start dropping weight, your insulin resistance goes down, the amount of reactive oxygen species spewing out from the fat cells decrease, and you start to get improved immune functions even in a few weeks of steady weight loss. So reducing your weight steadily starts to reduce inflammation and give you some degree of infection protection pretty quickly. And just even with even people at high risk of heart disease, you know, going on a cruise and eating at buffets and around holidays and Christmas times and come back from vacations when people have their heart attacks and strokes. And if they eat healthy just for a few weeks, their risk can go down by like 50-fold. We're talking about right now, get your risk down. Live on the, you know, a plant-based diet where you're having like a little bit of quinoa or oats with berries and seeds and some plant milk for breakfast. Have a big salad and a vegetable bean soup for lunch with some fresh fruit. And then if your dinner, you want your dinner to be earlier and smaller. And of course, we can get into all the incredible recipes that we make if we have time. But we make the recipes taste so good, but there's so much roughage and so much plant material in the recipes that it's hard to, you feel full from all the fiber, which curtails your appetite. And the nutrient content has an effect to mitigate your appetite, lessen your desire to overeat, and make you feel satisfied with less calories. So people start to lose weight right away if they are overweight on this program. And they realize that diets don't work, that eating healthy is the key to permanently losing weight, because making these changes permanently, and then your body can naturally gravitate towards the healthiest weight for you over time, get there and stay there.
I couldn't agree more. Whenever we have anyone on our show to address weight loss as a goal for people, we always come back to it's a lifestyle change. It's changing your diet. It's not a gimmick or a trick or a race to lose weight just to gain it all back. I mean, there's so many important lessons that you're sharing here. I know that people are listening and enjoying it. So all seriousness aside, I have a question because you're talking about beans and soup, and I'm not going to lie. I avoid beans because I feel like they give me gas and I don't want to be farting on everyone. So is that an issue that comes up with the people who come to your retreats who aren't used to eating those kinds of things? And what tips do you have for that adjustment to your gut that might not be used to so much roughage and beans?
That's right. So number one, because even the salad can cause gas if you're not chewing it well enough. But don't forget, you liberate the isothiocyanates, the ITCs, these anti-cancer ingredients, are liberated and formed in your mouth as you chew. And the better you chew, the more anti-cancer material is generated. So we're saying is when you eat that salad, blend it to a liquid in your mouth. Your mouth should be a blender. And you keep chewing that stuff and get the most nutrients out of it. With beans, the resistant starch and some other factors increase gas when people haven't produced the healthy bacteria to digest those things. And that takes time for the body to do so. So you might be starting with, if you're having a problem, you don't omit beans from your diet because that makes it worse when you take the beans out, because then when you put them back in, you don't have any bacteria to digest them. The trick is to titrate the amount of beans to the amount that's not going to have no gas, but not have much gas. And then you can titrate up once your body builds up the healthy bacteria. Because the healthy bacteria that are promoted and cultivated in the gut from the regular use of beans have an effect to thicken the biofilm that covers the villi in the small intestines, which then lowers the glycemic effect of every food you eat, which then lowers your risk of cancer and extends your lifespan. So there's an effect of developing the enzymes and bacteria to break down the resistant starch in beans that takes time. And now after a while of eating beans, after a few months of eating them, maybe you just have a couple of tablespoons or figure out whether it's 3 tablespoons or 1 tablespoon that you can tolerate, and then without getting too much gas, and then increase it over time. And after a while, you'll find out, oh, I can eat beans, no gas.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And would you recommend enzyme supplements taken separately with this? Or do you find that people are able to get the natural enzymes and prebiotics and probiotics and all those good, yummy things that our guts love from natural sources?
That's correct. We don't want to use the enzymes to do the body's work because you don't build up as much of the good bacteria. The benefits of beans are somewhat reduced when you do that. So we don't want to have something else digest the beans for us. We want to have the body do it and create its own bacteria to do so, mm-hmm. which happens. And of course, how should I say, a little bit of gas is not unhealthy. People sometimes are going to swallow some air when they eat salads and eat raw vegetables, and they're going to produce gas from that. And they might eat a different bean, or beans are not used to digesting, and it'll change the volume they're eating. You might have a little gas. So it's not something bad that's happening. But certainly, I know a lot of people would, if they're getting any indigestion, bloating, or difficulty with it other than gas, or there may be too much gas, then they can just slow it down, eat more cooked. Now, don't forget a bean to increase its digestibility, especially a black bean or a red bean or a zuki bean or a navy bean or a red kidney bean has to be cooked a long time. Mm-hmm. 2 hours of cooking if you're not using a pressure cooker or, some kind of, so we're talking about soaking and cooking a long time to make it more digestible.
Right. And for those who might not realize, explain the difference between like a canned bean, a can of beans versus making your own.
Well, that's right. The canned beans are already cooked. So they're 3 times the price. And we can do that. We can throw a canned bean into a soup or something when we're in a rush. But obviously, it's both more nutritious and more economical when you put the dried beans, soak them overnight, rinse them a little bit, poured the water off, and then added them to a soup with new water, get that cooking on a low flame. While you're putting the rest of the soup together, the beans could be cooking on a low flame. In time, you throw it all together, you close the pot, you let it just sit on a low flame with a little, and put a timer on that rings on your phone or something. And then you can shut the flame off and let it sit there on the pot even after it's cooked, let's let it just sit there until dinner. And then usually what I'll do at night is I'll put that whole pot of cooked soup with beans in it in a cleared out shelf. You shelf in the refrigerator. So I won't put a hot soup into plastic containers or even any containers. I'll wait till the next morning when the soup is cooled down and even thickened a little bit. And then we can aliquot it out into various containers for storage to use for the whole week.
Mm-hmm. Great tips. Well, you have so much to offer in all of the work that you do. What would be a good place for people to start? I understand you have a sort of quick start program that is a good place for people to start.
Yes, I have a lot of quick start programs. I have a quick start, you know, infographic, but my latest book, Eat for Life, is a great base for a person to start if they really serious about learning more, because we find that the more knowledge a person has, it enhances their desire, ability to stay with it, their love for this and their excitement about it is enhanced by knowing more about it, not just about the recipes, but also about why it works and how the body works to utilize these nutrients to get protect ourselves against disease, cancer and COVID and heart attacks and all and dementia. And what I'm saying right now is the body already is a miraculous self-healing machine that's resistant to these diseases. It's just in this country and parts of the world, the modern world today, we've been brainwashed to think that we're weak and we're flimsy and we're genetically defected and that sickness and illness that everybody's getting around us is normal or luck. And we don't see that we have control. And I'm saying that's just, we're being fed the wrong information. We have control, and nutritional excellence is incredibly powerful.
Wonderful advice, Dr. Furman. Thank you so much. This has been wonderful. I've learned so much. I know everyone's gotten a newfound invigoration for healthy living, healthy cooking, healthy eating. So thank you for sharing all of your wisdom with us here. But before you go, we always love to ask our guestees two closing questions. And the first is just give us one or two healthcare practices that you do every day to stay well. And you've already given us so many, but maybe what's like one other thing you do every day to stay well?
Well, I do something physical every day. In other words, I'll do something such as bike, swim, jog, exercise in the gym, stretch, bounce. You know, I'm doing something every day, and I'm trying not to stay sitting in my chair all day working. So if I'm working in a chair, I'm up from the chair, breaking up the work every, you know, hour, 2 hours, doing something, even if it's a 5-minute exercise break, where I'm just going up and down from a chair 20 times, or doing some stomach work, or doing some back work, or doing some core, I'm doing something. So it's the idea that exercise is not something you do in a gym 2 or 3 times a week. It's something you do every single day and even multiple times a day.
And finally, what's just one thing that we should all ditch completely and replace with something healthier today?
Anything with white flour in it. I always say the whiter the bread, the sooner you're dead. No pizza, no beans, no pasta, no white rice, you know, nothing white, you know, get that bread out of your diet. You know, it's dangerous. It's the same as sugar. Bread and, you know, just turns into sugar into your bloodstream. It's just, you're going to eat. It's a cake diet people eat. You know, a burger is a piece of cake with a piece of meat, or a pizza is a melted cheese on a piece of cake. It's a breakfast. They have bagel. It's a piece of cake. They're just throwing sugar and cake in their body. And there's no controversy with any nutritional scientist. When in what field of philosophy you're coming from, you can't expect not to be sick if you're going to be eating candy, sugar, and white bread.
Right. Well, Dr. Furman, your website, drfurman.com, we'll put a link to that in the show notes to make it easy for people to connect with you. Is there anywhere else you want to direct people to go?
No, that's great, drfurman.com. And I'm here to help people. So, we do have this, when people have food addiction and they're overweight and they can't, you know, they know they have to change the way they eat and they can't do it on their own. Of course, I have certain services, health, you know, we have food addiction counselors who specialize in people who have emotional eating disorders. And I have my retreat in San Diego where people come and stay with us to learn how to get rid of the food addiction and get rid of their emotional eating patterns and to learn how to love eating this way. So I enjoy watching people get well. And just to give you, like, for example, a 19-year-old girl was here last month and she was here 3.5 months and she lost 100 pounds.
Wow.
And there was a person here, you know, a person coming in for pick up his dinner tonight. He was here for 3 months and he's on the outside now. He comes by sometimes and buys some food and he lost 105 pounds in the last 5 months. And just, so we're talking about the ability to make it so people permanently keep the weight off and really get all their education they need, but also change their personalities to a degree, you know, to understand, to be grateful and to really appreciate and emote about the the world, other people, the food. They just have a whole new attitude that they're in back in control of their health and thinking more clearly and happier. So it's not just that we've, in other words, you have to marry this together where you're changing your diet because it's making you happier and a better person and better able to think and concentrate and care about things. And so it's just something that's very exciting to me.
Yeah. Well, it's empowerment on all levels. And that's what we're all about here on the Essential Oil Revolution, getting that power back, putting your health in your hands. And sometimes people just need a little hand holding to do that and a little education and knowledge to make it stick. And that's exactly what you're giving people. So thank you for what you do. It's really wonderful to see all the work you do and all the lives that you're changing. So thank you again for coming onto the show here and sharing your wisdom with us on the Essential Oil Revolution.
Terrific. Best of health to you and all your listeners. Terrific.
Thanks so much for tuning in, everyone. I hope you enjoyed today's interview with Dr. Furman. If you're looking for any of the resources mentioned in today's episode, just scroll down below wherever you're listening to this episode. Or if you can't find it, go to revolutionoilspodcast.com. We have all of our old episodes there with all of the show notes, easy to find. Don't forget to enter into our monthly giveaway where you could win a bottle of orange oil and our ebook full of our favorite essential oil DIY recipes for healthy living. Just email us your original favorite DIY essential oil recipe to DIY@revolutionoilspodcast.com. You can check out the details for that on our website as well. We'll catch you again here next week. In the meantime, keep on learning, keep on discovering, and most importantly, keep on treating yourself well. You are worth it.